This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
If the non-conference season is like spring training, then Arkansas's season opener is this weekend when Kentucky comes to town for the SEC opener. The Razorbacks and Kentucky will play three times at Baumwalker Stadium. 6:30 first pitch on Friday and Saturday, and they'll have a noon first pitch on Sunday. The Razorbacks number four in this week's coaches poll, and they entered the game against Grambling on Wednesday on a seven-game win streak. The Razorbacks really starting to play a lot better. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter, the color analyst for the Razorbacks. And Bubba, let's start with last week's series against Illinois-Chicago. Arkansas swept it. There were a couple of really close games where they had to come back and win those games. And it's the first series sweep for this team this year. We talked a lot in the first few podcasts about the significance of winning two of three on a weekend. I wonder what you think the significance is of sweeping not just a series, but a series that was four games.
I think anytime you sweep a series, it's tough, Matt, especially a four-game series. And I don't care who you're playing in today's college game. Everyone's got players. You know, we saw their first pitcher on Thursday, Peterson. He can pitch in the SEC. The guy's a real deal. He's got good stuff. And so, you know, I thought we did a pretty good job against him, you know, getting his pitch count up. Finally, we got to him and scored some runs. But, you know, it's a four-game sweep, and it's good. And I think it was good that we had to battle back in a few of those games. It's good for us early in the year to kind of test, you know, and see who can step up in that situation and who can't. We saw some big time at bats late in a couple of those games to come back and get the win.
You know, I thought one of the hallmarks of last year's team was the ability to come back late in games. I can't remember exactly how many times they did it, but you know, especially early in the season when they were playing Southeast Missouri State, Murray State, there were a lot of comebacks early in the year, even Texas Tech and Arlington when they played them in the season opener. You're seeing that a little bit with this team, and in particular in the eighth inning, Bubba. Think about Louisiana Lafayette. They were down 3-2. Jalen Battles hits a three-run home run. They take the lead in that game. And then twice against Illinois-Chicago, they were down in the eighth inning, and they had a big two-out eighth-inning rally that won the game. In the second game of the doubleheader on Thursday, they were down 4-1 in the eighth inning. They score four two-out runs, I believe, and they take a 5-4 lead. And then on Sunday, they're down by four runs going into the seventh. They score a couple of runs, make it a 6-4 game. And then Caden Wallace hits that big grand slam in the eighth inning to give them the lead. Now, UIC tied up the game, and Lanzilli had to have his walk-off home run. But I wonder, you know, what your thoughts are about the way that this team comes back. And do you see it being a little bit like last year's team? Because I thought that was so much of last year's team character, the ability to come back late in games. And you're seeing that a little bit, I think, with this year's team, at least early on.
I think so, Matt. And the thing is you typically see that out of Dave Van Horn teams. It takes it a while to all start to come together, but eventually they kind of morph into Dave Van Horn's personality, which is tough and gritty baseball. And it's, you know, they never think they're out of the game. And I really loved, I want to say it's the Hogs Plus video where they said, hey, who wants to walk it off? I saw Bobby Warnes in the dugout. I saw Colin Smith. I saw a few of the guys like, yeah, who wants to walk it off? They believe they're going to win. They're going to find a way to win it. And that's what good teams do, man. They just find a way to win a game. Bad teams find a way to lose it. Good teams find a way to win it. And I really see a lot of toughness up and down this lineup. And, you know, you look at the guys that get all the credit for, you know, Caden Wallace, the grand slam. Well, you know what? Three guys got on base for Caden Wallace before he hit that grand slam. You look at Lanzilli's walk-off. Well, Michael Turner's double to right center was huge to get it to score position in order for Lanzilli to come up and you know, ultimately hit the walk-off. And so I see a lot of unselfish at-bats late in the game. Now, early in the game, we're not scoring as many runs early, which, you know, I think it gets hard. As you get later in the game, that last inning in baseball is always the hardest. It seems like to get those last three outs. I don't know if everyone's senses are heightened They put together better at bats, whatever it is. But boy, you want to see some more of that early in the game. But boy, as the game goes on, you see these guys really lock in and have unselfish at bats. If they draw a walk, they draw a walk. They get hit by a pitch, they get a single, whatever. They find a way to get on base, and that allows somebody to come up and get that big hit.
I thought another big moment in the finale comeback against UIC was the pitching of Mark Adamiak, who inherited a runner on situation in the ninth inning. He walked a guy, didn't help himself in his first at bat, but then he ends up stranding a couple of runners at second and third. And that makes a big difference, I think, for the offense, for the lineup, whenever they come up in the bottom of the ninth, because they're not facing a deficit. You're able to go out there and probably swing a little bit more loose than you would if you're down by a run.
Absolutely. It makes a huge difference. Adamiak came up big. You know, I think Brady Tigard looked good for two and a third. I think he just ran out of gas. You know, he was up to 36 pitches, and I think he was just tired. But, boy, Mark coming in and doing what he did, shutting him down right there and ending that threat was huge. Get us into the bottom of the ninth with a tie game. And I think that was a huge difference in the end of that ball game.
Caden Wallace was the SEC co-player of the week. He was a national player of the week by Collegiate Baseball Newspaper after being moved to the leadoff position in the series against the Flames. He finishes the series 6-for-18. He scored 6 runs, stole 2 bases, had 3 home runs, 2 of which were grand slams. The other one was a 3-run home run. And he finishes the weekend with 13 RBI, Bubba. But I thought maybe more so than the grand slams or the home runs that he hit, I thought one of the biggest at-bats that he had was in the second game of the doubleheader. Peyton Stovall had gotten on base, I think with an RBI hit that had pulled Arkansas even with UIC. I think it was 4-4 at that point. And Wallace gets a single that allows Stovall to go first to third. We talk a lot of times about winning baseball. That's one of those moments where, you know, you're not going to remember that hit real well because it didn't score a run. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't go as an RBI. It doesn't go as a home run or anything like that. But that was a winning baseball play. And I thought it was just a perfect illustration of the type of weekend that Caden Wallace had, where he just came up big. It seemed like every time he came to the plate.
You know, it's not what you hit, it's when you hit, Matt. I know you probably get tired of hearing me say that, but Caden Wallace always seems to come up big. But, you know, and I don't want to get off into the negatives, but if you're National Player of the Week by Collegiate Baseball, shouldn't SEC, you know, agree with them and say, hey, yeah, you're National Player of the Week. I get it, the whole it's still an honor to be Player of the Week. But
in fairness, there's like 20 Collegiate Baseball Players of the Week, but go ahead.
I mean, why can't the SEC just say, hey, yeah, he's the player of the week? It seems like I'm not a big fan of the co thing. And if you compare the two numbers, they're not even close in my book, but we'll let that slide. But back to your point, you're right. Caden Wallace, a couple of really big ABs by Caden. And he just seems to be the guy that you want up there. And, you know, once again, I think you look back at Dave Van Horn moving him to the leadoff spot. He's come up in a lot of huge situations with runners on base. And that's, you know, hats off to the guys at the bottom of the lineup. That just goes to show you, it doesn't matter where you're hitting in this lineup. You know, you can come up big, and those guys in the bottom of the lineup are getting on base, allowed Caden Wallace to do what he's doing at the top of the lineup.
It's PR 101, that you get as many people involved as you can in these player of the week type deals. You saw it with the softball team too. Mary Haff threw a perfect game last week against Maryland, the first perfect game, solo perfect game for a Razorback ever, and she gets a co-pitcher of the week by the SEC. But I certainly get where you're coming from. Wallace and Michael Turner have really they've transformed the feel of the top of the Razorback order. You know, they had Turner hitting cleanup fifth at some points early in the season. They had Wallace hitting second. And now going into the Kentucky series, you see Wallace batting leadoff. Turner is really playing well in the number 3 hole. And if they can just find something there in the 2 hole, and they got this a little bit Tuesday night against Grambling with Peyton Stovall getting 3 hits in the 2 hole. They held Robert Moore out. We'll see where they put him, but he's slumping a little bit right now. It wouldn't be a surprise to see him drop down in the order a little bit. Bubba, if they could get something going in that two hole with the way that Wallace is hitting in the one, Turner's hitting in the three, Lanzilli is still producing well, getting on base a lot in the cleanup position. That's the two hole, I think, is really the key right now to this offense really humming along.
Well, you talk about the two hole. You know, last night's a perfect example. You got Peyton Sovall hitting in the two hole last night. And his first at bat, he gets around the ball, grounds out to second base. Now, he hit it hard, but he got around it. His next three at bats, he got basically the same pitch, fastballs and breaking balls away. They pretty much stayed away from him all night. He wasn't selfish. He just shot the ball right back up the middle, ended up with three singles back up the middle, had two RBIs, two runs scored. He was 3-for-4. And that's a great adjustment right there, Matt, by a freshman hitter. You know, a lot of guys get up there and everyone wants to pull the ball. You want to pull the ball. Well, if the pitcher's pitching you away, take what they give you. And that's just unselfish hitting right there, taking that base hit up the middle. And I thought he made a really good adjustment last night in those at bats. Now, as far as the Robert Moore in the two hole, Robert's a force also. And, you know, he's struggling a little bit. You say he's struggling, you know, during the homestand, he's hit 258. He's 8-for-31, 5 runs scored. He's hit some balls hard though at people. But it's not typical Robert Moore, but Robert can hit anywhere in the lineup. I still see him more as an RBI guy. I see him as a guy driving in runs. So I don't know at some point if Stovall is going to end up in that two hole or not. I think either way, you're in a pretty good spot. But what you said about Michael Turner on this homestand alone, he's hitting 15-for-33, 454 average with 17 RBIs. That's pretty good run production. That's in 9 games of this homestand so far. And so Michael's really getting it done. And the thing I like about Michael, once again, it's if you need a base hit and they're pitching you away, he'll just shoot it to left, get a couple RBIs. If they pitch him in, he'll play pepper with a building out there in right field. So he's been a really big force right in the middle of that lineup. It's really, really been helpful for this lineup. And, you know, as these guys start to heat up, it makes it harder and harder to maneuver this lineup because there's not an easy out up and down this lineup. There's power up and down the lineup. There's guys that aren't afraid to take a walk if that's what they give you. And so it's turning into a dangerous lineup. And I think they're starting to peak at the right time heading into conference play.
And full disclosure, we're recording this podcast before the second Grambling game. It's going to be played Wednesday at 4:00. The Razorbacks won 14-1 in the first Grambling game. And Bubba, we had the second straight game where it's a walk-off home run, but in just completely different circumstances. You know, the Lanzilli home run actually wins it for him against UIC. And during the first Grambling game last night, Braden Webb hits a grand slam in the eighth inning that initiates a run rule. And you said on the radio that you thought he was about to hit it out. What did you see right there, and why did you think that was about to happen?
You know, he had a really good at-bat before, and he drew a walk the at-bat before. And I told Phil, I said, look, sometimes it takes an at-bat like that to really get you going. He looked confident. He took some borderline pitches, fouled off a pitch, just looked good at the plate. And he just walked up to the plate, and I just felt it, you know. And you know, I wish I could put my finger on it, but it's just one of those things. You just look at a guy when he steps in the box. He took that first pitch. It was a 1-0 count. And I'm like, man, he's getting ready to bust out right here, get a grand slam on his first hit. And for me, Matt, I felt more pressure for Braden Webb than I did for Chris Lanzilli's walk-off, just because you love the guy to death. I know how hard he works. I know how much talent he has. And so watching him run around the bases, I told Phil Elson, I said, that's priceless right there. Seeing the smile on his face and just the weight off of his shoulder, because there's so much pressure when you still don't have a hit on the season and you can see it wearing on a guy. And so, boy, I was so happy for him. I just wanted to go down there and dogpile him at home plate. But hopefully that's something that can get him going, because, you know, he's a guy that we need. We really do. Defensively, he's a difference maker in center field. You know, Zach Gregory's done a good job out there, but, you know, Zach's a guy, he's not a center fielder. And when you get an SEC play, you got to be strong up the middle. And I think getting Braden Webb, if we can get his bat rolling, that's going to make a big difference in what you see out there on the field.
Yeah, I think there are those defensive positions where it doesn't matter how they hit. You want them to hit well, but they are more valuable as a defender than maybe they are as a good hitter in the middle of the lineup. And I think Webb probably is one of those types of players. You know, he's still coming back from this quad injury, but I heard Dave Van Horn talking a day or so ago that Webb is now starting to play where, even though the quad is affecting him, he's not thinking about it. And to your point about coming out of this slump, we saw this with Jace Borfin during the series against Southeastern Louisiana, where he was, what, 0 for 16, 0 for 17, and then he got a couple of doubles at the end of the game, and then all of a sudden they couldn't get him out the next day when there were two games. You wonder if that might happen with Braden Webb now that he's got that hit. As a hitter, how big is it to break out of a slump, and how does it change things for you psychologically?
Well, it's a huge, just a mental lift. And, you know, I was told a long time ago, Matt, the best way, I was a notorious slow starter. I was told to take it 10 at bats at a time. All right. So you have your 10 at bats. If you go 0 for 10, who cares? You start over. You're 0 for 0. If you go 9 for 10, you start over at 0 for 0 again. And that takes less pressure off of you. That way, when you look up the scoreboard, you're in your mind, you're not thinking, okay, I'm 0 for 19 or I'm 0 for 20. No, you're not. You're starting over right here. You're 0 for 0. And it just helps you focus on that at bat instead of looking it back at your past at bats. And it's in baseball, it's a game of failure. Hitting's mental. If you're not locked in mentally, you don't have a chance. Or if you go up to the plate and you're doubting yourself, and I call it loading to see if you want to hit. There's times this year I've looked at Braden Webb and he's loading to see if he wants to hit, not loading to hit. And there's a huge difference in the two. And, you know, you talk about guys that really mentally have come around. I mean, you look at Stovall when he pinch hit the other night. He pinch hit for Dylan Leach, cued one off the end of the bat, hit into a 1-2-3 double play with the bases loaded in the UIC game. Well, he came up later in the game, one run down, 3-2 pitch, drove it back up the middle for a base hit to tie the game. I mean, that's a guy, you know, really, that's a guy really making adjustment at the plate and forgetting about the previous at bat. And that's what good hitters do. And it's hard because, man, you go over there and you sit and you're thinking about that at bat. What you got to do is take that energy, take it out on defense, make a great play on defense to help your team, then come back in, you get your next chance at the plate, go up there and get it done.
I mentioned Jace Borfin. He's going to be out probably again this weekend against Kentucky with a shoulder injury that he suffered before the first game against UIC. Dave Van Horn said that he was basically tracking a fly ball in the outfield, and he banged his shoulder up against the outfield wall, and he might miss 2 or 3 weeks while he rehabs that injury. No official word on what the exact injury is. They expect him back, obviously, but that was a real bummer, I think, for this lineup, because against Southeastern, like we said on that last day, he was their best hitter. And I think there's probably a little bit of frustration now that they just finally got him going. They think he's a key piece in the lineup, and now he's going to have to sit out for 2 or 3 weeks and then have to get going again.
Well, the worst part about that is, you know, fortunately it's a long season, Matt, but you're right. When he comes back, now he's going to have to jump right into SEC pitching, you know, where he was kind of on a groove. He hit a couple of balls, 106, 105, was just really looking locked in, drove a couple balls to left field, pulled a couple balls deep to right center. But I don't think he's going to – I think he's got confidence now. I think he's going to come back and he's going to have that confidence he had when he left the game. You know, a big part of for me is visualizing. Just visualize those last few at-bats where you drove the ball. Keep playing them over in your mind every day, and then it's like you never left the lineup, believe it or not. I know it sounds crazy, but a lot of guys do that, and it really does help.
I thought it was interesting to hear Dave Van Horn talk about transfers over the weekend and how players like Lanzilli and Turner, who were so integral to the final game win over UIC. Of course, Turner had the double, Lanzilli had the home run that won it in the ninth, and how different it is for players like that who are coming from other programs where they may have not, I mean, in both of these guys' cases, baseball is not nearly as big at Kent State or Wake Forest as it is at Arkansas. And so, you know, they're kind of experiencing this almost like a freshman would when they come in. And Van Horn said that he sees it with these guys that it invigorates them, and that in a lot of instances, the players like Turner or Lanzilli or maybe Borfin, they come in and they're more excited to be at the ballpark, and they play looser than some of the returners who might, you know, be thinking about the draft or, you know, feeling pressure of living up to what they've done in the past here. I just thought it was really interesting to hear his comments about the transfers.
I thought it was awesome, Matt, what he said. And, you know, these guys, you think about real pressure is thinking that your career's over, you know. So for Michael Turner at Kent State, Chris Lanzilli, the same thing at Wake Forest, you're like, you don't know if there's going to be a tomorrow or not. So these guys come in here and they realize, wow, this is the best place in America to play college baseball. And it rejuvenates them, where I think some of the guys that are returning guys, or maybe guys that haven't experienced college baseball anywhere else, don't know how good they have it. Some of these guys that came in here as freshmen and have never been anywhere, I think, you know, you have a tendency to get a little complacent because you don't realize, you know, how good these guys have it here, how good the facilities are, how good the coaching staff is, you know, how good the fans are, you know, because they haven't been out there. And I know for Michael Turner being at Kent State, him and I have talked about it, it's completely different. You know, he doesn't say anything bad about Kent State. This is just it's a different game here. It really is. And just everything about it, from the facilities to the fans to the coaching, just everything about it is totally different. I really think it just rejuvenates these guys and makes them really appreciate going out and playing the game of baseball. And you can see in their enthusiasm, excitement, and their work ethic, you know, how much it's affected them being here.
We've seen that a lot in the last few years. You know, I think about a Trevor Ezell who came here from Southeast Missouri State. I thought it was the case with him, or Matt Goodhart, who came in from a junior college. You can go on and on down the list. Even, you know, Jalen Battles came in from a JUCO, Brady Slavens. The more I think about it, it's kind of amazing to think about how many transfers make up the totality of the roster. I want to talk a little bit about pitching, Bubba, and Connor Noland. I thought looked as good as he has in his start against UIC last Thursday. He did it on 6 days of rest, and I thought he was almost unhittable through the first six innings. He got into the seventh inning and, you know, the pitch count starts to get up a little bit. I think on pitches number 96 and 98, maybe 100, the UIC hitter started to hit him a little bit harder, but he ends with 11 strikeouts. That ties his career high that he set in the season opener against Eastern Illinois in 2020. And you really take away one inning this year, maybe two, and Connor Noland has looked every bit of a Friday night ace. Like we've said before, he's not your typical Friday night ace necessarily. He's not the guy that's going to overwhelm you with velocity. But the objective is to get batters out. And I think he's done a heck of a job of that this year.
Well, he's been awesome. He's done everything that we would hope that he have done in that Friday night role. And I think he did get tired. He got up, you know, the pitch count got up through six innings against UIC. He was incredible. I mean, he had his two seam working, had the slider working, had the cutter working, mixed in a few change ups. Basically just, he really dominated that game. And then you get into that, you know, the seventh inning, I think he just got tired, left a couple pitches up, hit a batter. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's when you're a two-seam guy, sinker ball guy, you elevate a ball, it's going to get hit in college baseball. And I think that's what happened. But boy, when you look at his numbers, they're really impressive. You know, I try not to look at the numbers, Matt, too early in the year, because you never know, like batting averages, you know, the ERA. I don't care about the ERA the early in the year, but you look at the innings pitch, he's got 23 innings pitched, 17 hits, 31 strikeouts. And the number that I really like is six base on balls. Opponents are only hitting 250 against him. I mean, those are pretty good numbers so far. And you're right, you take two innings out of that and those stats are even looking way better. So really impressed with what he's done. And, you know, looking forward to seeing him Friday night and see what he does against the SEC team when we step on the field 6:30 Friday night against Kentucky.
This is a neat deal for him getting to start against Kentucky on Friday night, because you remember in 2020, he was the team's number one pitcher, and he was going to start that Friday night game at Mississippi State. And then the whole world shuts down. College baseball season's over. Last year, everybody thought, you know, that he would work his way into the rotation at some point. He battled injuries, didn't pitch nearly as well as he wanted to, or that people expected him to. And so he's had to wait a little bit for this moment that he's going to have Friday night against Kentucky. And I think this is a really neat time for him.
I think so. And you take a guy like Connor Nolan, and he wasn't healthy last year. You know, he tried to come back and battle through it, had a forearm injury, and he just wasn't 100% all year last year. And I think he missed it. He missed being out there on the mound. He missed being the Connor Nolan of old that we got used to seeing. And I think he's really enjoying it. It's similar to Chris Lanzilli and Michael Turner. What we talked about is, you know, kind of rejuvenated. I think he's out there now. He's having fun. He's healthy. But he worked his butt off this offseason to get back healthy and get stronger. And I love it when a guy works that hard. I like to see it paying off when he steps out there on the mound. So really, like I said, looking forward to Friday night, seeing him out there on the bump.
Hagan Smith pitched 5 innings in his win over UIC the other day, gave up 4 hits. We saw him struggle with command more, Bubba, than we have at other points in the season. He had 3 walks, and all 3 of his walks were in the first 3 innings, all with 2 outs after he had retired the first 2 hitters of the inning. I know Dave Van Horn was a little frustrated with that, with the 2 out walks. But what were your overall thoughts about how Smith pitched? He had 8 strikeouts.
Well, he wasn't at his best, but when he had to, he made pitches, you know, and it was tough conditions, Matt. I mean, you know, and you don't want to make excuses because both teams have to go out and pitch in it. But, you know, it was cold, you know, and he's a velocity guy. And when you throw hard, it's sometimes you lose the feel for the ball when you get out there. But when he had to, he stepped up and made pitches. And I guess since I read Connor's stats, I'll read his 2.66 ERA, 20 innings, 17 hits, 25 strikeouts, 9 walks, you know, and those 9 walks, a lot of them have been with 2 outs, which you kind of want to avoid, but opponents are only hit 239 against him. So he's got good enough stuff. If he'll work that strike zone, I mean, his stuff plays really well, and he's got 3-plus pitches. And we still haven't seen him, I don't think, have all 3 pitches on. And I tell you, when he gets all 3 pitches working, he's the real deal.
I think it's easy to forget that he's a freshman because he pitches so mature that, you know, we kind of forget that, hey, there's still some growing pains that are going on here with this guy.
I think so. And you could see it. There was one instant in a game where a batter stepped out on him. I don't know if you remember. It was I want to say it was the second or third inning. Batter stepped out.
Yeah, about mid stride.
Yeah, and umpire gave him timeout, and it was a bad call. It was bad. The umpire shouldn't have granted him timeout, but he did. And I said. There's a lot of ways to fix that, but we're not allowed to do those these days. So I think Hagan let it affect him a little bit, and he started rushing. And, you know, the umpire would slow and call timeout and make him wait. And then the minute he put his arm down, Hagan would get his delivery and throw. And I think he started rushing, started leaving some balls up. I don't know if he let that affect him or not. That's the first time I've seen him kind of be a little bit out of rhythm. And he left several balls up. Matt Hobbs came out and talked to him. And you know, he does whatever Matt says to him, always seems to work, got him zoned in, back in the zone. But he was never really sharp after that. But like I said, he finds a way to get it done. And that's what the good guys do. And even when he doesn't have his best stuff.
The disappointing inning of the weekend for the Razorback pitchers was when UIC scored 6 runs during the 4th inning of the finale. Jackson Wiggins and Cole Ramage really struggled with command during that inning. UIC only had 1 hit during that inning, but they scored 6 runs, and that's because of the free passes. There were 5 walks in that inning. Wiggins also hit a batter. Wiggins ends up, during his start the other day, 3 1/3 innings, gives up 5 runs, just 1 hit, but there were 4 walks. He also hit 2 batters. What do you think happened with him during that inning? And, you know, Bubba, the thing with Wiggins, similar to Smith, we forget that Wiggins is still really early, I think, in his development as a pitcher. From all indications that I've heard from the people who worked with him growing up, he didn't really start pitching until he was about 17 years old. Now, he got on the mound and he threw, but in terms of, you know, actually learning pitches and, you know, the different things that a pitcher has to do, you know, he's still very early along in this process. But what do you think happened with him? And I guess with him, maybe the one concern that I've had with him even since the preseason was that walks and hit batters were also an issue with him during those preseason scrimmages too.
You're right. I wish he would have been able to get out of that game, you know, or that inning. You know, things kind of fell apart. Then he gets 0-2 on a hitter and hits the guy with 0-2 count. And that was the last, you know, they went to the bullpen after that and went with Cole Ramage. But, you know, to give up one hit and five earned runs, it's not the best line, four walks. But I think the thing that I'm most concerned with Jackson is you look at his stats, and the stats are impressive. 20 innings, 11 hits, 21 strikeouts, 12 walks. That's a big number. But opponents are only hitting 155 against him, Matt. They're really not squaring up very many balls. You think of the balls that have hit, I can't think of very many balls. I keep a hard hit chart, and I didn't go back and look at it. I probably should have for this, but there have not been very many balls squared up against Jackson Wiggins. I know one guy cheated a fastball and hit it hard, but other than that, he doesn't get hit very hard. Versus left-handed batters, they're hitting 174. Righties are hitting 146. Runners on base, batters are hitting 139. With runners and two outs, 048. But the one stat that jumps out at me versus the leadoff hitter, the leadoff hitters are getting on base at a 545 percentage, on base percentage. That's a big number. But Jackson has good enough stuff to get out of it. Now, you know, I said on the air the other day, I said, look, he's good enough to get behind hitters 3-0, 3-1 and come back. He can throw a 3-1 fastball, throw it by a guy, jam him or get weak contact. You get an SEC and that's a little different. I think the troubling part for me is it seems like that leadoff guy, whether it's a walk or a hit by pitch, that leadoff guy is getting on base way too often. And I think it could come back to bite you when we get into SEC play. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's a mental thing or maybe he just, you know, he's a laid back guy. Maybe he needs someone on base to really bear down. I haven't figured it out yet. But we'll see what happens this weekend. But he's definitely got dominant stuff. And like you said, Matt, I think he's still learning to pitch. I really do. I think he's, you know, he was a thrower in high school and in showcase ball. And now he's learning to pitch. Matt Hobbs, Zach Barr and his staff, they're teaching him to pitch and use his stuff to get outs. And I think, you know, where before, I think he just reared back and threw the ball. But when he's on, that fastball, that slider-cutter combination, it's really good. Plus, he's got a curveball that he hadn't been throwing his curveball very much. It's a really good pitch. Plus, his changeup's a good pitch. So, it's all the pieces are there, man. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And it's fun watching it all come together. We'll see. We'll see what happens on Sunday when he gets out there at noon.
Those two words you use, throwing and pitching, you know, it's such a subtle difference, but it makes all the difference in the world to a pitcher. It's kind of like a football quarterback. You can throw it a mile, but can you pass it 10 yards? That's what we're talking about with pitchers, right?
You're right. Absolutely. You know, I always joke around and I say, and I'll mess with Phil in the booth. I'll be like, all right, Phil, what's the best pitch in baseball? And he'll say strike one. And well, a lot of times that is the best pitch, but not just strike one, not just a strike, a quality strike. And, you know, Jackson is one that, like I said, can get behind hitters and get out of it just because he's dominant. I know the other day on the radar, you know, it was 96, 97, just about every pitch. I mean, he really had that fastball going early in the game. He doesn't have to be perfect. Where if you're a two-seam, you know, sinker, slider guy, more like a Connor Nolan, you can't leave a fastball belt high. You know, you got to sink that ball in. You got to cut that ball away. Where Jackson could get away, you know, you're not going to hang a 97, 98 mile an hour fastball. Just throw it up there and let them hit it because they're not hitting a lot of balls hard off of him.
You mentioned how you think Wiggins pitches better with runners on base. It almost seems like it's the reverse with Cole Ramage. We've seen him this year early in the season. He was coming in at the start of innings. And when he would have, you know, the bases clean, hitters weren't getting on against him very often. But it almost seems, Bubba, that when they brought him in some of these more high-pressure situations, you know, say with a runner at second or, you know, just a runner on period, that he hasn't pitched as well. You think there's something there to that with pitchers and the comfort level that they have? Do you think it's a difference of pitching out of the stretch versus out of the windup? What do you think's going on there?
I don't know. I see a lot of your big body guys, like a Jackson Wiggins. Sometimes they tend to struggle a little bit, you know, because they're trying to be quicker to the plate. But Cole Ramage, with his body style, it shouldn't affect him having runners on base. But I know exactly what you're talking about. He seems to do better, you know, when he's starting off an inning versus coming in a situation. But we've seen him come in before. I don't think he's fazed by the pressure. I think it's just there's a combination of things, but like I said, it's early on. And if I had to pick a guy to come out of that bullpen with the bases loaded right now, he's still one of the first ones I'd pick right now to come out and get some big outs for us.
This time last year, when they were starting SEC play, they didn't know who their closer was. You know, they were using Jackson Wiggins in a lot of closer situations. And then it wasn't really until early April that they figured out what kind of pitcher they had with Kevin Copps. Where do you think they are right now in their closer situation? Because they brought Nick Griffin in at the back of a game, didn't go real well with him. Tigert has been pretty good. You mentioned that you thought he ran out of gas there during the ninth inning of the final game against UIC. Mark Adamiak, I thought that, you know, that was an interesting development to watch him come in and get out of that jam in the ninth inning. Who do you think they're going to first if they need to get 2, 3, 4 outs at the end of the Kentucky game Friday, Saturday night?
Well, I wish I could tell you, Matt, that you look at Brady Tigert's been the guy they've gone to. If you look at just the metrics, he's got closer stuff. I mean, the guy's 95, 96. His curveball is ridiculous. Those two pitches alone, I mean, he can go in and close games out. But I also like Mark Adamiak. Now, I don't know if they're looking at him, you know, as what role they're looking, but he's a big guy. He's 6'4". He's got a fastball, you know, mid-90s, can touch 97, 98. His cutter, boy, once he gets his cutter on, that pitch is unhittable. It's 89 to 90, a really good late break on it right at the end. Almost, you know, I hate to say this, almost Mariano Rivera, like right at the end, he's just got good sharp late movement on it. And he's got a good slider to go with it. Adamiak could be a guy that might end up being in the closer role. You know, it's really hard to say. It's early on. You know, we've got some veteran guys that could still do it. You know, Zeb's a guy that's been there, done that. You know, he could come in and do it. But I tell you, if you look at the pitch analytics, you know, for me, and if I had to just look at all the analytics and say, I want this guy to be my closer, Adamiak's got the stuff. Brady Tigert's got the stuff. The only problem is they're both young. You know, Brady's a freshman. Do you want a freshman coming in closing out an SEC game on a Friday night with, you know, 10,000 people in the stands screaming? So I don't know that it'll affect him. He seems to be pretty grounded. He's got good mound presence, but I don't know. What are you thinking on the closer role?
I wish I knew. I think you're right that Tigert's probably the first one out of the bullpen, but I almost wonder if we're at a point like we were last season where we haven't seen who the closer is that emerges. Because like I said, you know, you didn't really know what you had with Kevin Copps. I thought it was the Auburn weekend, which was April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd last year, when Copps came out and pitched 3 straight days, where it really kind of opened my eyes to, this guy, they're not hitting him real well. You know, he'd pitched well up until that point, but that was really the first weekend where he started to look real dominant. And, you know, Nick Moten is a really interesting pitcher to me, because during the fall, they thought that he might have closer stuff. And then in December, he comes down with mono. You know, it really hurts his development. He's been kind of behind all the other pitchers to this point. I mean, they think that he's maybe 2 weeks behind all the other pitchers. And so you're thinking about, you know, Nick Moten might be where the other pitchers were in Round Rock. Is he someone who can come along? I don't know. It's certainly something that's really interesting to watch, though, over the next couple of weeks.
Well, hey, another guy that's kind of flying under the radar that in my mind could come in and get some huge outs, whether it's a closer or what, is Evan Taylor. Evan Taylor hadn't been hit hard yet. He comes in and just continues to get outs. And I knew he was going to be tough on lefties with his arm slot where he's at, dropping his arm slot down a little bit. He's got that two-seam fastball. He's got that slider. But what he's done, he's made some righties look really bad. Mm-hmm. The righties aren't picking up the ball against him as very well either. So, you know, he could be a guy that could come in late in the game. You know, now, closer, I don't know. But possibly, you know, he still hadn't got hit hard yet, and he's throwing strikes and – if you're throwing strikes, no one's hitting you hard. Hey, maybe you're a closer. Who knows?
That's a good point. I think he might be better against right-handers than he is against left-handers. He's not a lefty specialist anymore. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know, it never goes out of style, a great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location too on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
SEC play starts for all 14 teams this week. We'll get into that in just a minute. But first, look back at the series that were notable last week. Really, Bubba, the one that caught everybody's attention was that South Carolina beat Texas twice in Columbia. They had the start of the series postponed. Texas won game one, and then they played a doubleheader on Sunday, and South Carolina won both of those games over Texas. Texas, to that point, was 6-0 against SEC teams this year, and really now Texas looks like they're in a little bit of a tailspin. You know, they struggled against Texas State last week, and then they lost twice to South Carolina. They lost to College of Charleston on Tuesday night. They've got some issues in their bullpen. One of their best pitchers is going to have Tommy John surgery. But for South Carolina, that win over Texas was really notable for that program.
No, it's a big win, and it made South Carolina my new favorite team other than the Razorbacks just by taking two out of three from Texas. So, you know, we always like it when the Longhorns lose. So that was good. But, you know, they seemed like they were unbeatable early in the year. But, yeah, you know, all of a sudden there's a few chinks in the armor, and it's starting to show right now.
Something that you see with some of these teams is that whenever you lose a big-time pitcher, we saw this with Arkansas last year when they lost Peyton Paulette at the end of the season. It really affects what happens to you at the end of the weekend, because now you've got pitchers who are pitching not only in different roles, but when you have a guy like Tanner Witt or Peyton Paulette last year for Arkansas, that's 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 innings that you're having to figure out how to replace with pitchers who may not be used to pitching in those types of roles.
You're right. It's huge, Matt. And the thing is, guys start to settle in the roles, even though it's early in the season. Guys kind of have an idea what their role is going to be, and all of a sudden they're thrust into a new role and having to pick up more innings. And it makes a huge, you know, it can really affect the team. I think that's the advantage we have. Arkansas has is we've got so much depth. You know, now we were able to overcome Peyton Paulette. It still sucks, but I mean, it is what it is. But you know, We've got the ability. There's enough depth down there in our bullpen that, you know, we can overcome stuff like that where some of these teams can't do it.
couple of other outcomes that were notable last week. Middle Tennessee State went to Auburn and won a series over the Tigers. And then, Bubba, a game that really caught my attention was that it was just one game. It was part of a showcase type event, I believe, out in the Phoenix area. But Missouri beat Arizona State, and Missouri right now, who Arkansas will play next week, is 12-2 overall. This is a program that you always kind of expect to be the afterthought of the SEC. And I don't know, you know, I guess their strength of schedule is about 170 right now, so that's about middle of the pack in D1. But it's really kind of interesting to see what Missouri might become, because they played really well in the non-conference.
Well, you never know what you're going to get with Missouri. That's the thing. When I looked at our schedule, I thought, okay, this is perfect. We start with Kentucky, you know, then we go to Missouri. That's a couple of pretty good teams to play early on when you're still trying to feel through and everyone's trying to settle into their role. And now you look at Missouri and you really don't know how good they're going to be. And I guess we won't find out until we actually pull up on campus next Friday and then we'll find out. But they're a strange team that can play great one night and then just absolutely lay an egg the next. So you just don't know.
We mentioned earlier that Caden Wallace was a co-SEC player of the week, the other players of the week by the conference. Brant Belk of South Carolina got the other co-player of the week award. He had multiple hits in all of their games against Texas. There were also co-pitchers of the week, Matthew Becker of South Carolina and Parker Stinnett of Mississippi State, and Jared Dickey of Tennessee was named the freshman of the week. He had 11 hits last week, 25 total bases. This week in the SEC, as we said, all 14 teams are going to play other SEC teams for the first week. South Carolina is at Tennessee. Mississippi State is at Georgia. Ole Miss is at Auburn. Florida is at Alabama. Missouri is at Vanderbilt. Texas A&M is at LSU in a matchup of a couple of first-year head coaches, Schlossnagel at A&M and Jay Johnson at LSU. And, of course, Kentucky is in Fayetteville this weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. SEC teams in the coaches poll this week. Ole Miss has overtaken the number one spot. Vanderbilt's number three. Arkansas is number four. Tennessee, number five. LSU's number eight. Florida's number nine. Georgia is number 20. And Mississippi State is number 24. Kentucky just outside the top 25 of the coaches poll. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers are the best in two towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from the ballpark. Skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Bubba, let's get into Kentucky a little bit. The Wildcats are going to come into this series kind of licking their wounds a little bit. They played Indiana on Tuesday night, and they got batted around really bad. The worst performance they've had all season. Lost to the Hoosiers 20-7 in Bloomington, and they gave up 23 hits. Now, you're not using your weekend pitchers in the midweek very often. You might use some of your relievers in different roles, like Arkansas has done with Adamiak, or some of the other pitchers that they're expected to throw this week, like Austin Ledbetter. How do you think a midweek loss like that affects Kentucky as they're coming in for their SEC opener?
I think it can affect them, because if you think about it, Matt, on a Tuesday night, it's no different than us last night. They're out of the bullpen. Now, they're going to have a Tuesday starter. That's not going to be a weekend guy, obviously. But their bullpen guys, they're going to be bringing in bullpen guys that are going to pitch on the weekend. You know, that's why they throw them on Tuesday. It gives them rest before Friday, Saturday, Sunday rolls around. So, you know, someone in there, I went and looked, and I'm trying to figure out the roles of the different guys in their bullpen of who gave up the runs. But, you know, there was some really bad relief pitching. If you look at Indiana, they scored every inning, and they scored a lot on a few of those innings. There wasn't a single inning where they didn't score a run looking at the box scores. So I think it could have an effect on them, you know, coming in. Now, you know, baseball is a mental game. They'll forget about it before Friday, but somebody gave up some runs in there. That's going to be some of their guys coming out of the pen this weekend. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see, but I've gone over the numbers, Matt, and offensively, you know, it's a typical Kentucky team. I mean, it really is. Their batting average, they're hitting 324 as a team. Razorbacks are hitting 275. They got 23 home runs. We've got 19, 44 doubles. We had 33. Slugging percentage, 518. We're at 468. Now, strikeouts, they've struck out a lot. They've got 132 strikeouts and 93 walks. We've got 111 strikeouts, 80 walks. But on base percentage, 425. It's a really good team on base percentage. We're at 384. They've stolen a lot of bases, too. They've stolen 21 for 23, and we're 6 of 8. So if you look at them offensively, they're a pretty good team. But the strength of schedule, it looks like they've played a lot of cupcakes. I think you said they were 216 out of 301 on the strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to say how good they are, but Kentucky teams typically hit. But then when you look at their pitching, you know, we've got a huge advantage there. It's not even close on the pitching side of it. Their team ERA is 5.55. We're 3.11. And I can go on. I don't know if you want to hear all the stats or not, but, you know, look at batting average against, you know, teams are hitting 274 against their staff. Teams are hitting 200 against ours. There's all the way across the board. They've given up 175 hits. We've given up 93. So pitching wise, I mean, we definitely have the advantage on the pitching side. And I think that plays well into our game because, you know, we know we can hit the ball. We know we're going to hit the ball. And so I think it's going to be a fun series.
Neither of these teams have lost a series this year. Kentucky comes in to Fayetteville 14-4 overall. And really the one series that I think grabbed everybody's attention was the one against TCU in early March. They beat TCU on a Friday 13-11. And then they played them in a doubleheader on Saturday, beat them 5-1 before TCU won 12-8 in the final the final game of the series. TCU is one of those teams that I think everybody respects, Bubba. And so to see them beat TCU is notable, although I don't know that this is your typical TCU team being in the first year under a new head coach. Don't really know what to make of Kentucky, and they're always such a hard team to figure out. It's kind of the same as you remember when Kentucky came in 4 years ago in 2018. I think they were ranked number 4 or 5 in the coaches poll, and Arkansas hit 13 home runs against them on that opening weekend. They play such a weak non-conference schedule that it's really hard to get a feel for how good they are whenever they come into Fayetteville early in the season like they typically do.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's what I love about Dave Van Horn. He's not afraid to challenge his guys early in the year and get them ready for that SEC grind where some of these teams don't do it. You look at Tennessee's the same way. They're out there playing a bunch of cupcakes. I don't even know what their record is right now. It's like 14-1 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's different. You know, Dave Van Horn will challenge our guys and get them ready for SEC play. And I agree with you, Matt, 100%. You don't really know what you're going to get out of Kentucky until they roll into town on Friday. But I know last time they were here, it didn't go well for them. So we'll hopefully we'll repeat that.
Yeah, you mentioned Tennessee. Their strength of schedule, 169 right now. And you look at the teams that they played, they've got 43 home runs, which leads college baseball. But the teams they played can't pitch. I mean, Iona is winless this year, and they've been outscored 169-20 in their 11 games. Rhode Island is winless in 13 games this year. They've been outscored 148-34. You know, I think that Tennessee's in for a wake-up call once they play some of these better SEC teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the honeymoon will be over, but we'll see what happens. It's we know they're a good offensive team, but they're not as good as what they are on paper right now. Let's just put it that way.
I wanted to get your thoughts, Bubba, on a news item that came out this week. The SEC says that they're going to use TrackMan to evaluate the performance of umpires. And if you don't know what TrackMan is, it's the system that sits up behind home plate, and it's basically a ball tracking system. Think about if you're watching, say, the Masters, you know, you see the guy tee off and the ball tracker follow the ball off the tee. That's essentially what you've got in baseball, and coaches love TrackMan and the data that it can give them both from a pitching and a hitting perspective. But the SEC is going to use TrackMan as a way to evaluate umpires this year. And it's really interesting to me because this gives you now data, you know, scientific data that tells you whether or not an umpire is within the zone. And then I thought it was interesting listening to you and Phil Elson talk about this on the radio the other night. You know, Matt Hobbs says that what they've noticed from their TrackMan data that they've kept over several years is that the strike zone is actually lowered this year in the SEC. This is really fascinating stuff to watch over the next several weeks.
You know, I think it's a good move. I don't know if you might have to mute me to hear what I really think about the strike zone sometimes. You know, you sit there behind home plate and you just want these guys to be consistent. That's it. And I get it. It's hard being an umpire. It's a hard job. But, you know, last night alone, you know, I'm looking at the data and there were a lot of missed calls and some of them were in big situations. You know, I look at it bat that Braden Webb had. You know, he took two strikes that neither one of them were strikes. There were multiple times last night that pitches out of the zone were called balls, pitches in this or pitches out of the zone were called strikes, pitches in the zone were called balls. And the guy, I'm not going to say his name, but he had a really bad night last night. And there's been a few of them this year. Now, for the most part, I mean, it's pretty good, but I look at it like this. Our players are judged by their performance on the field. And it's very important. If a batter takes strike three on a 3-2 slider off the plate, he goes back to the dugout. It doesn't, there's no asterisk beside it saying that was actually a ball. I mean, he's judged by that strikeout. These guys ought to be held accountable. I really believe that. I think it's something that should have been here a long time ago. I think they need to be judged by it because I think some guys really don't. I don't know that. I don't want to say they don't care. I don't know that they put as much thought into it as they should. And, you know, I don't like, oh, well, he's got a low zone. He's got a high zone. He's going to give a ball off the plate. Bull. The plate's 17 inches wide for a reason. Call a strike and a ball a ball. Sometime when we got more time, I'll tell you a real funny story about Don Zimmer, how he blew up on it in an umpire's meeting in spring training one year when they were talking about the new, they were going to start calling the high strike and they were going to give, instead of two balls off the plate, they were just going to give a ball and a half, and he blew up. It was the funniest thing, one of the funniest things I ever saw in baseball, and I love Don Zimmer for that because he blew up on this umpire. And I really think that that's something that gets overlooked because it really affects these guys. You know, it really does. And, you know, I feel for the players when they take a strike that's strike three in a crucial situation, it's not a strike. So I know that's a long-winded answer for you, but I'm really passionate about it. And these guys need to be held to a higher standard because we hold our players to a high standard.
I think Dave Van Horn, he didn't come right out and say this, but he hinted at it pretty hard in his press conference after the Sunday game against UIC that with a better strike zone, it wouldn't have been that tight late in the game. I mean, there were a lot of moments where he thought a player had taken ball four and then he ends up striking out, you know, a pitch or two later. And Rick Allen was the home plate umpire on Sunday who, you know, people were really upset with. I just think it goes to what you're saying that, you know, an umpire can play a crucial part in a game.
Absolutely. You know, one of those was Jalen Battles in a huge situation, took ball four, wasn't even close. They called it a strike. Well, comes back to the plate, you know, ends up, you know, making an out, striking out. I can't remember what he ended up doing, but there's been a lot of situations like that. I know Jackson Wiggins in the first inning threw a 2-0 ball right down. Not right down the middle, but it was a pitch that Michael Turner didn't even try to frame. And it's the same game. It was that same umpire. He didn't even frame it. He just caught it, threw it back, and they called it a ball. And they're like, whoa, what happened there? And I get it. We're going to have bad days. But, hey, shake it up a little bit, you know. Do something different and figure it out or get someone else back there to do the job. Because, yeah, you're right, this guy. And I didn't say his name, but, yeah, he had a horrible day back there.
I said it for you.
I appreciate it because
no, you're in a different role than I am. You know,
Dave really did. Dave came out of the dugout a couple times, and I know he was frustrated with it. And you know, you don't see Dave complain early in a game like that. You don't see a lot of complaints. You know, you don't want to be the first pitch of the game yelling about something. But I think we're three pitches in, and Dave was already fired up because it was just a horrible call.
You're in a different role. I remember the Texas Tech announcers who didn't get to call a game back in the fall because they called the football officials out. So I won't put you in that. I won't put you on the spot there, Bubba. Hey, real quick before we get to our next segment, we're going to talk to Darren Hedrick, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky baseball. What are your thoughts on what to watch this weekend? What are the things that you're looking for from the Razorbacks?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the lineup, you know, how they approach these Kentucky's pitchers. We still don't know their rotation. And if we go off of the past track record for Kentucky, they're going to let us know about 15 minutes before the game what their starting rotation is, or at least their Friday night guy. It's frustrating that they do that, but it is what it is. But I really am. I'm looking forward to our lineup, seeing it click against SEC pitching. And then really just the, you know, we know what we're going to get out of their starters. I'm anxious to see Connor Nolan out there on a Friday night again. It's been a long time coming, so I'm really looking forward to seeing him on the bump when the lights come on a Friday night. And then just seeing who steps up big out of the bullpen. You know, I say all along that, and I probably refer to it too much, is these preseason, these games that we've played so far are really spring training. Now, Dave Van Horn doesn't approach it. I mean, we want to win every game. The fans don't tell you, but this is just to get us ready for Friday night, because that's where it matters. We got 30 SEC games. And I tell you what, that's what counts right there, is what we do in those games. And so I think we're starting to peak at the right time. I think guys are starting to have good at bats. Pitchers are starting to come together. I was really impressed with our guys out of the bullpen last night. So I'm looking forward to all that coming together this weekend.
You know, something that you and I were talking about earlier this week, and this isn't to say that Kentucky and Missouri aren't teams that are capable of beating Arkansas, because I think they are. You know, Arkansas is playing well. They're not playing nearly as sharp as I think some people expected them to play early in the season. They're not playing as sharp as the team played early last year when they had to play Texas and Texas Tech and those types of teams early in the year. But I say all that to say this. Arkansas is not playing Ole Miss or Tennessee or Vanderbilt or those types of teams the first few weeks. They kind of get to, I think, stair step up to the, you know, the better competition over these first few weeks. And so the schedule sets up well for them, Bubba, because you got Kentucky and then you got Missouri and then you've got Mississippi State, obviously the defending national champion, but a team that isn't playing just real well this year. And, you know, one of the things I should have mentioned earlier in the SEC report is that Landon Sims, their number one pitcher, is out with Tommy John now because of an injury he suffered against Tulane. He was one of two Mississippi State pitchers who tore their UCL during that Tulane series. And so Mississippi State, this isn't the same type of team that I think people thought they were going to be early in the season. Arkansas gets a chance really to maybe not ease its way into the SEC schedule, but it is a schedule break because you don't have to play the heavyweights early on.
No, you're right, Matt. Starting out against Kentucky, and once again, you never know what you're going to get against Kentucky. It's hard to say, the same with Missouri, but I think the schedule does line up perfect. And then go, you know, having Mississippi State, you know, they're down a little bit. Hate to see guys get hurt, but it's, you know, that's baseball. It's part of the game, but I'm really excited to see the first part of this season, because I think things are really starting to come together well for us. And boy, it's a long time coming this Friday night. I can't wait for it. I really look forward to every SEC weekend, and I think it's going to be a fun season for us.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot! So I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, and we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And, of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No, thank you. You're doing awesome! Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas and Kentucky play three times this week at Baumwalker Stadium. Game times are 6:30 on Friday, 6:30 on Saturday, and noon on Sunday. All three games will be streamed on SEC Network Plus. The Week Ahead is brought to you by The Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and Martin Luther King Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. We go now to Darren Hedrick. He is the baseball voice of the Kentucky Wildcats, and he joins us to give us a look at this weekend's opponent. Darren, thanks for taking time to come on the podcast.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Appreciate it. Big series this weekend.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it seems like Arkansas and Kentucky, they always meet up early in the SEC season. It's a real early, you know, gauge of where each team is when these two teams meet, just because of the timing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I can think back to 2018, and this is where sometimes sports can go cyclically. Kentucky had a tremendous start in 2018. At one point, I think they were even ranked number one, or they certainly were in the top five. And They go to Fayetteville to open SEC play and got swept by the Razorbacks. So here we are again, Kentucky's best start at 14-4 since that 2018 season. And who do they open up with? The Razorbacks in Fayetteville. So we'll see how this one goes.
Yeah, kind of interesting. Kentucky, I think, was number four in the coaches' poll for that series. Arkansas is number four in the coaches' poll for this series. Let's talk about this 14-4 start for Kentucky, because the series that I was, I guess, really caught my eye was a couple of weeks ago when TCU came to Kentucky Proud Park and Kentucky won the first two games, won the series over the Horned Frogs, always a really good program. What happened during that series, and what's different about Kentucky this year?
You know, I think the biggest thing is for Kentucky, the difference in that series, this group has a competitive spirit to win games. They have a really good culture compared to the last couple of years. They got a lot of leadership, and they're older. This is an older team, a veteran team. I think this is the first time under Coach Mangione since maybe that 2018 team where this is an older group. The last couple of years, it's been a lot of freshmen. Well, finally, those freshmen are sophomores, they're juniors, and then they have added some senior transfers like Darren Williams, who's been a big spark out of the bullpen. He transferred from Eastern Kentucky. Danny Harris, another transfer, is a senior. Hunter Jump, their left fielder, is a senior transfer from Arizona State. So I think a big key for this team is they're older, they're more experienced, and they have a competitive fire about them. And against TCU, they just made plays. They just battled. This team will fight to the very end. They've overcome a 7-run or greater deficit twice already this year. They came back to beat Western Michigan after being down 12-4. So this team has a lot of fight in it. It's big that so far they're 2-2 against Power 5 teams. I'm interested to see how that continues to shake out. The one thing that they got to figure out, though, is the pitching staff right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that pitching staff. I've noticed a lot of differences in the weekend rotations. What do you expect to see this weekend in Fayetteville?
Well, I think if everybody is healthy and ready to go, I think you'll see Cole Stupp in game one. And Cole has had his early season struggles. He is a sinker ball pitcher. And when he's on, he dominates. And he does so efficiently. Last year, he cruised against Georgia in Athens. He went 8 innings and really wasn't touched for the most part. We've seen him do that. He had it on cruise control against High Point before giving up a couple of runs late. So great Friday night starter. Let's see if he can get back on track for Kentucky and get things where it was last year for him with that sinking fastball. He's got a really good changeup, I think, is the best wipeout pitch he has. From there, things are kind of in flux. You've got Magdiel Cotto. He's a transfer from South Carolina. And you know, Matt, on paper, he's a sophomore, but really he's a freshman. He only threw 8 innings with the Gamecocks last year, and now he's getting a more focused instruction from Kentucky's coaching staff. He's in the rotation. He's learning on the fly. And, you know, he still just has that growing to do, that player development aspect of things. And then Sunday, you know, Tyler Bosma didn't pitch last week. He had some tightness. We'll see if he's available this weekend. I would think so, with the temperatures being a little bit warmer this time around instead of snow on the ground like it was last week. So that's kind of a look at the rotation. Bosma is a transfer from Miami of Ohio, where he was the Friday night starter for the Red Hawks. So a tough lefty, and a good rotation for Kentucky. They just got to work through some injuries and growing pains right now.
I'll tell you, when I look at Kentucky's stats, the thing that really jumps off the page to me, Darren, is Chase Eastep and the start mm-hmm. that he's had offensively. I've got him at 471, 7 home runs, 15 extra base hits, 21 RBI. These are elite numbers when you're talking about a player that's almost 20 games into the season.
He has been a great story, Chase Eastep, this year. Last year, he struggled going through the SEC and came out of it on the other side a different person. He was more devoted. He was more in focus of what he needed to do to have success, and he worked all offseason, worked not only just on growing his game but changing his body. He's more athletic now. Chase was he probably wouldn't like me saying this, but Chase was a football player playing baseball. He starred at Corbin High School in Corbin, Kentucky, is a football and baseball player, chose the baseball route, but now he has a baseball player's body. He's dynamic as a third baseman. He has flashed the leather multiple times at the hot corner, but you're right. His offensive numbers absolutely jump off the page. If you look at the SEC offensive leaders statistically, I think he's in the top three in just about every category. Career-long 16-game hitting streak. He was voted by two different publications as National Player of the Week this week. So he has been a terrific story. He's red hot right now, and he's a very confident third baseman.
Also see that Daniel Harris is hitting really well. You mentioned him, a key transfer into the program.
Yeah, Danny is one of those guys. He was a steady bat at Eastern Kentucky. He was a nationally recognized player with the Colonels because of his bat, and he has picked right up where he's left off. In the tough loss to Indiana on Tuesday night, he was a guy who had a three-run triple in the first inning. So far, the power numbers haven't been where he wants them to be, but he's been obviously consistent when you look at his average and his production. He's getting the ball in play with success, and I think the coaches are reminding him over and over, Danny, just keep with the same approach you have. Eventually, those singles are going to turn into doubles. They're going to turn into home runs, so He is just fine right now, working on a couple of things here and there, but he has been a huge addition, not only to this offense this year, but also on the infield playing second base.
You know, one of the things that I think can get so overlooked is the importance of a catcher. You know, like Arkansas mm-hmm. had Casey Opitz for 3 years behind the plate, and man, what a steady presence he was for the Razorbacks. And you know, they've done a great job replacing him with Michael Turner this year, a transfer from Kent State. I know that Kentucky, mm-hmm. one of their team leaders, if not the team leader, was Colton Kessler a year ago. He's gone now. What does it look like behind the plate?
So the everyday catcher right now for Kentucky is Alonzo Rubalcaba, a transfer from California Santa Barbara. And funny story, you mentioned Kessler. Last year, Rubalcaba was the starting catcher for Kentucky. He is an outstanding receiver. He frames pitches. You could argue he steals strikes. He does what mm-hmm. a catcher is supposed to do. So he is one of the top line receivers in college baseball. He's got a strong arm. He's good at throwing out runners. The bat is coming around with Rubalcaba because we have seen him have one quality at bat after another, and he's a tough out. Now, the average doesn't jump off the page at you. Even though it's really good, it's not up there with Ryan Ritter, Chase Eastep, Danny Harris, and some of these other guys. But what Alonzo is a tough out. He grinds at bats. You're not going to get him on three pitches or one pitch or two pitch. You're going to grind the at bat, and pitchers are going to have to work to get this guy out. And he does a nice job with runners in scoring position of putting the ball in play and driving them in. So for Rubalcaba, just really quickly, that story I was going to tell you about with Kessler. Last year, he was the starting catcher, gets hurt. Kessler comes in and is an all-world hitter in the league, over 300. And, you know, basically, Alonzo got Wally pipped. And so now he's back as the starting catcher now that Kessler is in minor league baseball. So a pretty neat story is Alonzo. He was patient last year. Now it's paid off as the everyday starter. Kentucky is really strong up the middle. That's where you want to be with their shortstop, second baseman, catcher, center fielder. This is a championship-level defense up the middle.
The power numbers are another thing that jump out to me, Darren. I mean, you're looking at 44 doubles, 5 triples, 23 home runs. Those are all, you know, top half of the SEC. What makes this team so good from a power perspective?
I think it's mostly their experience, but they also have a new hitting coach this year. Todd Williams, who had been the volunteer assistant coach the last couple of seasons, departed for a full-time opportunity as an assistant under Gary Henderson at Utah. That has elevated Will Coggin, who is their recruiting coordinator. And Coach Coggin has moved from third base into the dugout, running the offense with Coach Mangione this year. And in talking with some of the players, the difference between Williams and Coggin, who are both outstanding coaches, and Williams is a guru when it comes to hitting an offense. Coach Williams would have a system that tried to get a team approach. So everybody had similar at-bats and approaches, where Coggin kind of tailors his system to the individual hitter. And so now we're seeing some guys, not all of them, but some guys more comfortable this year because they're within their swing instead of a team concept. There's nothing wrong with either way to do it, but we're seeing some guys have success. But those power numbers come from a little bit of the launch angle that they're using right now, just trying to get the swings to where they can drive the ball in the air. And then some of it is just being older and stronger this year as well.
Coggin, if I remember, what did he play at Mississippi State?
Yes. Yeah, he came up from Mississippi State. He was the recruiting guy down there for the Bulldogs, basically was the one who helped put together the group that ended up winning a national championship.
Okay. Yeah, not a bad feather in your cap. Let me ask you real quick about you guys are coming off a tough loss on Tuesday night. Indiana, a team that Arkansas saw a couple of weeks ago, beat you 20-7 in Bloomington, 23 hits. What happened in that game, and how do you think Kentucky overcomes that this weekend?
You know, I think it was just for the pitching staff, it was one of those nights. I don't know if you've ever been to Bart Kaufman Field here in Bloomington, but when it is a warm spring day and the wind blows out, think about Wrigley Field on a warm summer day. The ball just flies. And Kentucky struggled. They threw a lot of young pitchers last night. I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure just about all of them were sophomores or younger last night. And so it was just being about throwing competitive pitches and commanding and executing and locating. And to give Indiana all the credit in the world, they knew what kind of conditions they had at their home ballpark. And every time Kentucky made a mistake, they made them pay for it. And those home runs they hit were no doubters. So, you know, that's one thing. They've got to go back and regroup. And for these young guys, you can't hang your head because you might be called on. Now that we're in SEC play, you might be called on a Sunday or a Saturday. So it's just one of those things where you've got to try to put that one behind you. It's going to be tough, but you've got to just bury that one behind you and move on to Arkansas.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get midweek pitching-wise. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Darren, you and Phil Elson are in the same boat this weekend. You're both do baseball and women's basketball games. You're going to stay in Bloomington, right, for women's basketball tournament.
Yeah, I get to stay in Bloomington. In fact, I'm here right now. And then tomorrow I may try to head up to Indianapolis to watch some of the men's tournament. But we'll be here in Bloomington this week for the Cats as they take on Princeton Saturday at 4 o'clock and get the winner of Indiana and Charlotte, hopefully. So, yeah, Phil and I are a little busy this week. Hate we're not going to get to be there together to watch the Cats and the Hogs because I know that it's always fun. It's a great atmosphere there at Baum Walker, and I hate I'm going to miss that this year.
Yeah, I think I saw that Arkansas and Kentucky are two of 24 teams that have got their men and the women in the NCAA tournament. So it's a busy time for both of these programs. Darren, hey, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you so much. Darren Hedrick of the Kentucky Radio Network. Again, three games this weekend for the Razorbacks against Kentucky. That will end the 13-game homestand for Arkansas. They'll be on the road for four games next week, beginning Wednesday against the University of Nebraska at Omaha. They'll play the Mavericks at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. That's the home of the Royals. They'll go from Kansas City over to Columbia for their first SEC road series against Missouri. Visit us at WholeHogSports.com all weekend for all of our Razorback baseball coverage. It is a busy weekend for us. We've got reporters all over the country. Scotty Bordelon and Bob Holt are in Buffalo to cover the men at the NCAA basketball tournament. Paul Boyd is in Austin, Texas to cover the women at the NCAA women's tournament. And we'll be fully staffed at Baum Walker Stadium as well. Hope you'll check out the basketball podcast of Mid-America with me, Scotty, and Andrew Joseph. You can do that by searching for Whole Hog Radio. That's three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO on Apple, Spotify, or most other podcast stores. Hope you'll leave us a rating and a review. It'll help others find our podcast. Again, come to WholeHogSports.com before, during, and after the games all weekend. We'll have you covered. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones, and we'll see you again next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.